Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Barely. I can't see you. I don't know what you're doing.
Whatever.
You could be scratching yourself.
That's weird.
Or driving erratically. I can't tell whether you're talking to the studio audience or to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I'm not doing either one of those
things. I'm putting everybody on notice.
We know what you're doing.
I'm watching
myself. If you're in here, stop driving erratically and scratching yourself. We're trying to put on a program.
Be sitting.
Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. You're catching us on livefromthepath.org or on 99.3 KTA. Either way, we're glad to see you. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Here's what we got going on tonight. We are on proof number 49, going through the 50 proofs from GodIsImaginary.com. And proof number 49 is, look at who speaks for God. This is bound to be insulting.
Yes, it
and so we'll go through that, and we'll see if we can provide proof or a reason for the hope that we have against this proof that God is imaginary. Also, we'll be doing advice from Dear Life from the Path. And here, I'm gonna introduce what I call the five-minute heavy. There's a lot of guys talking a lot of, about a lot of heavy stuff on the radio. We tend to stick on the lighter side. But I'm going to introduce what I would consider to be a relatively heavy topic. And we're going to cap it at 5 minutes because people just start blowharding after 5 minutes. All right?
That's truth.
Get what you got to say, get it said, and then move on with your life. And so we're going to do the five-minute heavy, and it has to do with the recent news from the Boy Scouts. So we're going to talk about that just a hair. Everyone else has done it, and we're going to pile on, but we're calling it a five-minute break.
Yeah, I think that's a good move. People can't take grandstanding for too long.
I'm going to talk for more than 5 minutes.
That was my John Bova impression.
That's interesting.
Hey, it takes you ever listen to Bova when he gets excited about something? It takes him 5 minutes just to prep up to what he's going to say.
I'll tell you something. Blah, blah, blah.
He takes three preparatory breaths.
He's like, I do indeed. I go,
here's the thing.
It makes for solid
radio.
I was
in the Word 3 days ago, and this thing just came up. Anyways, so we're going to hit that.
Actually, you know what? Tell me that's not a very exciting thing. And this is probably has to do with generally Jesus followers only, right? But when someone mentions a verse and you're like, oh, I just read that yesterday, you know, you get slightly geeked up and excited. You and him are now on the same plane.
Right, exactly.
And
that was in 1 Thessalonians. I just read that.
That very rarely happens anywhere else, you know what I'm saying, where someone's like, I was totally inspired. I was reading through Jeremiah. I'm like, I was just reading through Jeremiah, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, your best buddies. It's like being a smoker.
It is like being a smoker.
Yeah. You have good smoking buddies. You could also make good Bible reading buddies.
Huh. There's a guy standing outside in the cold hovering next to the building, and you're like, dude, what are you doing reading the Bible there?
He's like, being the light. Being the light because he is in the light.
Dude,
being
can I
read the light?
Is that Psalms 119?
Can I borrow your pocket New Testament? That's how I make friends.
We read together.
So we're going to hit that. Also, we got advice on Dear Life from the Path. And if we got time, I got a little bit of Pope-style advice.
Oh, yeah.
Pope's in trouble again this week. Doggone that Pope.
Is he?
Hey, just, now, here's the deal. We can't keep out of trouble, and we only talk for like an hour a week, 54 minutes or something.
That's fair.
The Pope is talking all the time, and everyone's always writing down what he says. So he's bound to say something dumb and have someone write it down and be like, heretic. And this is regardless of whether you believe in the Pope or what he does with himself. I'm just saying, if someone were to follow you around with a microphone all the time and write down everything you said and put the weight to it that they put on the Pope, you can't be surprised when the guy says something. You're like, well, that's kind of outlandish.
Yeah, I wouldn't have friends. Yeah.
You know, the truth is like I usually take a pretty heavy hand at most televangelists, but they're taking a lot of arrows for the faith, right? And so even the guys that I think are in it for the right reasons are going to say the wrong thing eventually because they're just dudes, you know? Yeah. And I think they do their best, but I follow the example. I come down on them pretty hard. I'm like, how dare you represent Jesus Christ and blah, 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 and you say this and blah, 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 you know? But but actually, I think we're going to run into that in our proof today on some pretty solid figures.
Yeah.
That have said some things.
Right. Yep, very likely. All right, anyway, that's what we got going on. You're listening to Live from the Path. You can catch us here every Monday night from 10 to 11 p.m. at livefromthepath.org or Saturdays at 7 on 99.3, the lovely folks at KTIA. And check this out. So the Christian Business Directory is coming out soon. And guess what ugly mugs are going to be hanging out on the KTIA advertisement page?
Hold on. Is it big? Are we getting a big slice of the pie?
You know, here's the deal. If the guy that runs KTIA is discerning, and I believe him to be, it probably won't be big.
That's fair enough.
That's a mistake.
Here's the deal. If David Jeremiah is bigger than me, I'm going to call David Jeremiah personally like he's done it.
Well, now, here's the thing. It is. I think it's a page of, like, local guys.
Oh.
And I don't want to get in a fight over this thing, but I think we are the most handsome of the local guys.
Oh, man. Absolutely. I mean, they only grow them a certain way at the Pathway Studios.
I took a quick, I mean, just a quick poll. Really? What do you guys think? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, here's the deal.
That's 3-3.
We're generally referred to as the Clark Gable of local Christian internet radio shows.
I said that earlier.
Yeah. I mean, what else could you ask for in this market?
So anyway, keep an eye out. Frequent the Christian Business Directory. I'm fairly confident 90% of those guys actually love Jesus. The other 10% are probably just buying ads. Just a heads up.
Yeah. Christians are known as tightwads, so I can't imagine that you'd generally be in there trying to make money. You know, you have to love Jesus.
Is that true? Christians known as tightwads?
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if, like,
well, good stewards.
Go to a restaurant or something.
Is that what you mean? Good stewards?
No, here's the deal.
Tightwads.
Most people I talk to in the service industry, like, they can't stand the Sunday morning crowd, and preachers in general always think that they get some kind of slide because they're people of God. Especially in, like, the tree trimming business or lawn care industry. Anytime he goes, in fact, I was talking to a guy a couple weeks ago, and he goes, the three cheapest people that I've ever worked for, number one, preachers. Number two, teachers. And number three, post office workers. Now listen.
There's a lot of stress in all those jobs.
Government.
Yeah.
Interesting.
To be fair, this was not coming from me. I was talking to someone and this was his opinion. And I thought, well, you know, he doesn't seem like an outrageous man. So maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe the post office, people of God and people that have to put up with your snotty kids, maybe they're hard to get along with when it comes to getting a service. You know,
I think the preacher thing, maybe like two generations ago, people used to do nice things with the preacher because they didn't make any money.
They didn't pay them.
Yeah. It's like, well, here, we'll give you a chicken once in a while or something. Here's a ham. Or the barber would, you know, maybe just do it for free, cut the hair for free or something. But I don't know, in the modern day, there's still preachers don't make, like, you know, more than the average person or anything, but they make more than they used to.
So they don't get quite the free house and the slick haircuts and a used Buick.
I mean, I've never received any of that stuff. I mean, very rarely have I gotten something that...
Do you wear your I'm a preacher t-shirt? Because I feel like that would go a long way.
No, but like, you know, if you're getting your hair cut in a strange place, you know, in the conversation, what do you do? Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. That would really double for you.
I mean, double money.
If anything,
double money, preacher man.
I'll cut off double the hair.
God's got deep pockets. You want a perm?
I'm always afraid to tell, like, the dentist in case he's an atheist. He's like, I guess I forgot the Novocaine. Yeah.
Maybe God can regrow this tooth.
Let's see how you respond to this.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, be nice to your preacher and your post office worker.
Well, I think it just says they're cheap.
Yeah, maybe so.
Don't be cheap. That's the lesson, right?
I try to tip. I'll go 20% and then... And then I'll average up to the next dollar. Like if I'm in a restaurant, especially if they know I'm a preacher, you know, at least it's not like an outlandishly wonderful gift tip, but it's a
with a conundrum. They're like, that guy left a big tip, but he's not wearing a white suit.
I feel like it's blood.
How do I resolve this?
Where are the sequence?
I feel like it's almost blood money, though, right? Like, here's extra money. Thanks for sinning on the Sabbath. I'm going to take the day. I feel like you're promoting the wrong thing here.
Well, if that was the case, you shouldn't be out to eat anyway.
I mean, you know, I don't get super legalistic about the Sabbath, but you're you're pretty much not doing anything, and that guy's working, and you're like, here's big money. Thanks for taking the dive. That's true. They may Sabbath some other day. I'm not sure.
Do you ask, or is that one of those, like, don't ask, don't tell businesses? Hey, no, seriously, though, dude, do you Sabbath
people
elsewhere?
People are touchy about their Sabbath, right? Like, if they work on Sunday, and this goes the same for people who know Jesus, too. You're like, so when do you Sabbath? You know, just kind of interested. And they're like, yeah, that's really none of your business. You know, like, whoa. They don't like to talk about it because they probably don't do it, right?
Well, especially if they're, like, a non-believer, why would they Sabbath?
Well, I just said as a part of the church followers, Dan.
Oh, I wasn't listening.
That's how you keep a radio show running, paying attention.
I'm always the weak link.
But like if you you know what, no wonder they charge me so much for this haircut. What do you mean I can't get a fro for $5? But like, here's the thing, like I've been reading through Leviticus and you know, you have to be in the right heart to start reading through Leviticus, right, and find out how it applies to you. But he does not shy away from mentioning that Sabbath thing multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, he only talks about not boiling a goat in its mother's milk twice. He mentions the Sabbath like 10 times.
That's like punishable by death.
Yeah, yeah. he doesn't fool around.
It was like a big deal.
And so, you know.
It wasn't like, you really ought to take a break. No, you will. Sit down and shut up.
Yeah.
How about you take a breather there? Just go ahead and sit down for a couple minutes. It's okay.
Anyway, keep that in mind. Don't, tip your waitress well. Realize that they're
not... Pay the tree man full price.
Pay the tree man what he asks. You know, here's the deal. If you were willing to get up and cut that tree down, you'd be a tree man.
Actually, you know, that was a conversation that we've had with our construction team. Like, we're in the middle of kind of pricing out a building and stuff. And one of the things I said was, if we can find some deals on some furniture and materials and that kind of thing, that's cool. But, like, I just don't want to be the guy that's, like... You know, trying to haggle people down on what they're worth. I mean, they got to feed their kids just like everybody else. Yeah, and like, you went to do the work for that church, and they were like, "Well, you know, it's for Jesus. Can you do it for half the price?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, my kids can eat half the lunch this week because I want to build a church for you." And I thought, like, that's crappy. We're not doing that.
It is kind of funny, right? Like we claim to know the God that owns everything, and we're trying to, you know, chintz down the price like he can't afford it, you know? And so, like, I feel like God will provide if he's backing up what you're doing. So just pay a guy his reasonable wage.
All right, here we go. Let's get to our proof.
I need a raise at this radio show, Ben.
I'll double what we pay you.
Sweet.
In fact, across the board.
Yes, yeah!
Everyone gets double.
Five times the raise.
Party at Mike's house.
Proof number 49, whereongodisimaginary.com. He's got 50 proofs that God is indeed imaginary, and we're walking through them because we should be able to provide a defense of the faith. I don't think we're convincing this guy necessarily, although hopefully God's working on him. But there are some barriers that people have that I don't know that necessarily keep them from believing in God, but I think sometimes keep them from committing to God. I think there's things where, like, they have a belief there, but you don't turn your life over to a God that you think is not sovereign. You don't turn your life over to a God who tells you to pray, but you think those prayers are empty. I think that's actually more of the barrier. I think you have a lot more people that say, "I believe in God," but things like this actually stop them from a full commitment because they feel like somehow they're going to look foolish because some of these things of God may or may not be true. And they kind of just kind of back away from all of it and go, "Well, you know, I'll just kind of half commit." I actually think that's more the risk than thinking that God is actually imaginary. It's more of his God is not who he says he is, which tends to be this guy's problem, is that if God is who he says he is, he simply doesn't like God.
There's no way God would work like this.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we're walking through the proofs. We've gone through 48. We're on proof number 49, and the proof is, look at who speaks for God. Here we go. In Christian mythology, God is supposed to... typographical error on this man's part. To the all-powerful, all-knowing creator of the universe. God is supposed to have incarnated himself as Jesus, and he is supposed to have written the Bible. And yet today, God is completely and absolutely silent. Therefore, the only thing we hear from God comes from people who are speaking on his behalf. If you would like to understand how imaginary God is, all that you have to do is listen to God's spokespeople. Because in many cases, these people are lunatics. If there actually were a God, if he actually had anything to do with love, he would silence these people because they're an absolute embarrassment. Here are several video examples that demonstrate the problem. Thousands of examples like this are available. So we're going to watch some movies necessarily, but I'll tell you what the video clips are supposed to be. Number one is Thank God for Dead Soldiers. Number two is Holy Spirit Enema. Three is Fighting Priest. Jimmy Swaggart Would Kill a Homosexual. Yikes. Okay. First of all, how many of these are the Westboro Baptist? Okay, that's what I thought. Number one, Thank God for Dead Soldiers. That's a Westboro Baptist. Pat Robertson, Ted Haggard, Paula White, Nuclear War Prophecy. In general, that's it. He's basically selected a bunch of clips of which he disapproves. You can go to the website and you can watch the clips if you want to of what these guys are saying. He says, if God were real, he would speak for himself. The fact that God does not speak and that he allows any lunatic who comes along to speak in his name shows us that God is quite imaginary. Fellas, what are your thoughts?
I have a hard time with this sometimes, too, I guess. In fact, I was just talking to a gentleman last week. We were talking about the inerrancy of the Bible, and I said it was written by God and through the Holy Spirit, through men. And he said, why would God allow his Bible to get perverted? And I said he wouldn't. He would leave it be, and that's why it's just as trustworthy as the day it was written. And he says, if that's the case, then why are there a bunch of churches out there that are claiming to be in Christ's name and saying a bunch of stuff contrary to the Bible? I'm like, well, because we live in the realm of the deceiver, and people like to look pious and be dirty. So, I mean, is it a fair statement to say that God
there for a while.
That God protected his holy word and doesn't necessarily control the people on how they use it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, I mean, he's provided that word for us to use that people would pervert it. That Satan's a success for Satan would be to try to pervert that and twist it and confuse. We know that to be the realm and the tactics of
to pervert anything of he can exactly. That is right. Godly and holy.
Yeah.
And actually, he did that in. I mean, Satan tried to do that right off the bat with Jesus in what was it, Matthew 3 or 4? Uh-huh. You know, right off the bat, you know, saying throw yourself off of here. You know, the angels will catch you, whatever, using the Lord's word against him.
Right.
And Jesus fired right back off, and so. I don't know, but I thought it was an interesting point because coming from their point of view, I totally see it. You know, like if this magical, you know, God of yours can protect his Bible that he wrote, you know, why wouldn't he control his PR? Where's his PR? Who's watching his image? You know, if you want me to believe that he's God, all the people around him don't really present him like that, right? They present themselves as little gods, and this is the big God that they kind of pull from. And so, I mean... Frankly, I kind of get his point. I agree. We take God's message and you know, as humans, sometimes we run with it and pervert it into what we want it to be. And all those videos, I'm pretty sure, are exactly that.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's people that speak falsely. I think that's certainly true. There's people who like to take a highlighter to 3 or 4 sections of the Bible that they want to live their life on and either ignore the rest or treat it as if it's not also Scripture. And I would agree that's dangerous as well. The presence of poor Christians doesn't make Christ wrong or God not real. It just means that we have a presence of poor Christians.
Yeah, right. Well, and actually some of the points that go through, that those videos go through, like it's piecemeal apologetics, and it's terrible, right? Like I've seen people study for a high school debate better than they study when they show up with stuff like the end times nuclear prophecy that they extrapolate from the Bible, or the end times prophecy just happened a year ago, you know, out of the radio station. It kills me when people, they put no effort into defending it. They throw it out there like, you know, like this part of the Bible happened to be the most important part of the Bible, ignoring God's character and previous behavior, and this is going to be the deal, right? And so I actually kind of wonder how people even come to these conclusions when I've seen them put more work into going to the city council and debating whether they need a fire station or not.
Okay, I'll give you the audio a little bit on this woman. Let's check her out.
You know what? My engine's revving to go. It's revving up. How about yours? And if it's not, you know what? If your engine is not revving up, you know what you need? You need a Holy Ghost enema right up your rear end.
Wow.
You know that's not right.
I mean, that's not in the Bible anywhere.
No. I don't think anybody of a sound biblical judgment would say, yeah, that represents God.
Yeah, we need a Holy Spirit enema.
That's a way to put it.
Hey, I've never seen this type of thing. Let me tell you something.
Hey, here's the deal. This one video on YouTube has more likes than our entire channel.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
She's got 246 thumbs up.
You know what we need?
No.
Never mind.
No.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to test it out just by adding the search term enema on the next 3 weeks' worth of videos, and then I'll know what people are doing on the YouTube.
Yeah, and actually, do I recall this in the last couple of weeks? Didn't Pat Robertson say something else that got him in some hot water?
Yeah, he's always saying things that kind of get people irritated. I can't remember what this last one was, but yeah, he said something. And it's the thing is, I mean, he has a point. These are people claiming to be God, and I don't want to say they're not godly. They're just being goofy. Whether they're just bad theologically, or they're just having a bad day, or they're just trying to raise some money, get people all riled up, whatever it is, I don't know. That doesn't disprove God, but he does have a solid question to say, well, why doesn't God shut him up?
Yeah.
And I think that's just the way he works. Why doesn't God shut us all down when we sin? Why doesn't God just strike people dead immediately? He just doesn't work that way. He allows us to fail. He allows us to sin. He expects us. He tells us to be readers and studiers of the word so that we recognize a false prophet when we see one. So there's some of the responsibility goes on us. We can't just sit there and say, oh, man, I can't help it. I just, whatever the teacher told me to do, I did. You know, I don't care if it's your local pastor. I don't care if it's the person you listen to on the radio or some of these people on television. You'd better be reading your Bible and knowing what God says, not what they say God says, because we're all personally responsible and accountable before God for our actions and how we have lived up to his word. So that's important to understand.
No, and actually, you know, I'd say the Bride of Christ has a problem in that area generally. You know, across the board, like they will default to the past 3 bad church experiences they had, where they were non-participants. You know what I'm saying? Like, this church didn't suit my needs. This church really wasn't you know, doing this. You know, like when you get down to doctrine issues, I think that's an excellent time for you to split. If it's not about Jesus, then you're right. You're in the wrong place. But like, sometimes we get a lot of, I get a lot of complaints from people who are like, my church really wasn't serving me. I didn't really dig on the worship band.
Doesn't that sound like really ridiculous if you look at it from a macro level? Hey, this is the place where we come together, holy convocation, and serve the Lord. And I feel like I wasn't served.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I wasn't, like, you know, they're like, I really love the worship, but I didn't like the preacher. Or I really like the message, but the worship band really wasn't for me. Really? Why don't you ask God what he wants you to do there? You know, maybe you're there to serve somebody else. Did that cross your mind? That maybe you're there to do something for other people, and it wasn't just you to soak it all in and just be the sponge of greatness, you know, that will eventually leak out by Monday morning. You know, like, you're there to join in community with people. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some crappy worship sets out there.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you, right? Maybe the music stinks.
Right, but if your MO is to come into the service, sit in the back and split right after and be like, I didn't connect with anybody.
Yeah.
Well, no doubt.
No one wants to talk to me.
Neither
you know?
Does a Morlock or a sewer drilling for the same reason.
Well, here's the deal. You have all eternity to have the most awesome, cool worship music there is. Your job right now is to serve God and serve people and to get people to know Jesus Christ. And just shut up.
Yes.
There's some people I just was so tempted to just reach across and just slap them in the face and say, what are you, you're acting like some big pious person who has it all together. They're just not serving me. I'm not getting fed. Well, feed yourself. Big lazy slug.
I mean, dude, we need a new banner for the church.
Oh, man.
Love people. You know what? Forget it. Serve yourself. You know where the coffers are.
But think about it. Think about it. Like, the letters that Paul wrote to the church, the implication is that they would read it and then do something with it.
Exactly.
Right. As opposed to, hey, can you hire a guy to follow me around and make sure I live my life?
That's the thing, though. That's the misconception over the seeker-friendly church setup, right? Is like the people who should have been feeding themselves by now stay in the seeker mode. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they wait for you to feed them. They wait for you to fellowship with them. If you don't ask them to this and this event, they're like, oh, they didn't invite me. It's like, look, here's what God's people are doing. Get involved with it or don't get involved with it. We can't massage your self-esteem every time we go out and do something. You know,
and that's one of the struggles I think we have when you're trying to grow the church for the glory of the kingdom is like, is figuring out, like, how much are you catering to people and just creating, like, a social atmosphere where they're actually not learning something about Jesus. Me and the worship guy talked once. We had some young adults that came into the church. We were like, you know, maybe we should do something with all the young adults, put something together. And I thought, you know, I don't want to get in the matchmaker business or the church. And was like, well, maybe if, you know, you should come together and we'll put together an event and it'll be like a little mixer.
Yeah, here's someone that was born kind of the same time you were born.
And then we did this also recently with, like, whether we put out name tags or not. And, like, the thing is like, why don't you just go up to somebody and say, hey, how you doing? My name is such and such. As opposed to, hey, dig my name tag.
I see I have one and you don't.
You know, it's
you
just,
must be new.
You must be new.
I can only do so many things for you, you know? Like, why don't you learn to introduce yourself to somebody? And hey, even try to remember so-and-so's name for next time.
Yeah.
These are basic human things that you can handle on your own. I feel like I don't have to follow you around. It's like, hey, Bill, what's that guy's name? Okay, good, excellent. Now we'll go talk to him.
Now, I think that's true. Like you run into – it's hard to have a church, you know, a body of Christ that – you know, you're trying to bring people in who don't know Christ. You know, they stop in or they're invited in. And you're trying to make them feel comfortable, not awkward. But you're trying to hold your own people to a certain accountability for not feeding themselves or actually doing anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've been going to the church for like 3-4 years. And, you know, they're still just taking the message and soaking it in. And it's okay. Like, you still love these people. But, like, if you're going to claim the name of Christ and you're going to put that communion in your mouth, there's some things that need to change, brother. You know, you need to get with the program. You can't call on the name of Christ and then ignore him when it's convenient for you. And so that takes a little bit of responsibility. And frankly, if you believe Jesus did what he said he did for you, you know, it's time to pick up some responsibility and at least branch out and teach other people, you know, so they can know too. Even if you're not the hands to the grindstone or the guy helping out at the hurricane or whatever, you know, at least you can open your mouth and say, here's what Christ has done for me.
Right.
But you tend to not get that. You tend to get a lot of people that come into the seeker churches and then just kind of stay a seeker. You know, even if they're in and they just stay in that mode and don't really move.
You know, I'm partially ashamed to say it, but for a long time that was exactly me. I was involved in the church and I was there every Sunday. I was there at youth group. I was there for Sunday school. My dad was one of the pastors and all the different stuff. And I was just there just to hang out. I was the guy that came and I had donuts and I had hot breakfast Sunday and all this different stuff. And then I left on Sunday and then, you know, took off my church mask and went right back to being me for the rest of the week. And then Sunday morning, if I felt like waking up, I'd go back to church and everything like that. I was in the exact same spot, and I actually had to be called out upon it, saying, you know, what are you doing? You've been going to this church for 10 some odd years, and, you know, how are you involved? What have you been doing to actually spend time with God, spend time with the church, trying to create community, and be there for the new people, being there to really help people out and really, really get plugged in into missions and anything like that involving the church and getting involved in a ministry. And I had to make that conscious decision for myself. And since I have, I've been getting more out of church.
Now, let me ask you this, because I think the question would be, most people shy away from that kind of behavior because because they're afraid they're going to offend somebody, you know. But like, is a guy who's humbly seeking Christ going to take that the wrong way? You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm participating and frankly a godly a guy that I know that's godly is running a godly marriage, a godly family, and participating in the church, comes up and says, I feel like it's time for you to step up a little bit. I see what you've been doing. I love you. I appreciate you. We've been praying for you, but I feel like it's time for you to take you know, the next step here. How can I help you with that? You know, like a guy who cares nothing for Jesus and just likes the donuts is going to be totally offended by that.
Right.
Right. A guy that's truly seeking on how to, you know, get closer to Christ, I think will take that as in, I appreciate you noticing. Can you help me? Can you pray with me? Let's figure it out.
That's a test of where your heart's at. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. As I say, the disciple is a follower of Jesus, and we're not in the church these days making disciples. We're just making, you know, attenders.
Right.
And that's the difference. Yeah, a tender will get upset. A disciple is like, oh, I'm in. Well, tell me what I need to
know.
Right,
exactly.
How
can
I follow
better?
You get
called upon for something. You get told you need to be starting doing something. If your heart's for Christ and your heart is for the bride that you're a part of, you're a part of the body of Christ, you say, okay, well, how can I be the hands? How can I be the feet? How can I be the ears, the eyes, whatever? Oh, if you're exactly what you just said, in a tender, you're going to get offended. You're going to walk away, and you know you're not going to go anywhere. It's exactly where your heart's at, and that's the good test of it. You know, some people may get offended by the whole, even if you've got the heart for God, you may get a little bit offended by the whole.
No, true.
You know, you need to start doing stuff, but that's where conviction comes in. That's where the Holy Spirit's going to bring you towards that, because the straight up answer for that is you need to be involved in the church. You know, yes, you're an attender. Yes, you're there to further your relationship with Christ, but at some point in time, we all need to go forth. I mean, that's what we're called to do as disciples of God. That's action. That's more than just reception. That's action in the church, and that's what it comes down to.
Well, I think it's important to not get us wrong here. Like, I think it's great to pursue excellence in the stuff that you're putting on in your gatherings and stuff. I mean, God is a creative God. I mean, there's no reason to misrepresent God and His people by like doing things sloppy and poor and like not caring or serving people during the process. But the question is like, you know, do you provide something where people can look around and they don't mistake God for something else because you've done so poorly? But, you know, are we moving them on? Or, like, are we just creating an event where, you know, like if there's no way to ever progress from the, ooh, look, flashy lights and fluffy right. Jesus, you know, if you never progress from that, then, like, not only have we, like, wasted their time, but we've kept them from going somewhere else that actually might help them.
We've failed them.
And you're not even utilizing the people that God have sent you, right? Like, because, I mean, those people could be, you know, this guy learns to love Jesus and learns how to disciple. He disciples 10. Those people disciple 10. And now you're at 100 dudes already through one guy, right? But if you never disciple the first one, and granted, this is not everybody. Like, not everybody in your church is going to be mega disciple man. But, like, they'll weed themselves out. They'll show you who they are, you know, and they'll make themselves available. And I guess the question is what it boils down to, maybe to ask our church leaders is do you have a good way to disciple? Not a cheesy way, not a booklet, not a pamphlet, not a lame class. Like, do you have...
That's the challenge of the world right there.
And that's hard, right? Like, I get that. But, I mean, like, are we honestly praying and seeking for a way to disciple those that seek discipleship, you know, instead of just attendance? And I think we're... I think maybe people are starting to recognize that and move a little bit, which is a great feeling to know that, you know, that we're attempting to be the hands and feet more than just the, you know, using your hands to receive whatever you think God has. And we say that all the time. Let's see what God has for you today. And some people are thinking, yeah, what does God have for me? You know, and then the guy who wants to be disciples is in the back going, oh, God, what do you have for me? I feel like I'm ready. You know, let's do this, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And so if there's an avenue for that guy to move, you know, if you're, as long as you're providing an avenue for that guy, then, you know, stuff like that, like the God is imaginary man, that stuff doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're a disciple. They're not just left on their own to come with some kind of wingback conclusions on stupid things that have nothing to do with Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. We should have Pat Robertson on the show.
So you know, one thing,
maybe not, says
Dan. Nah, probably not.
So the last thing he said in this proof was, the fact that God does not speak and that he allows any lunatic who comes along to speak in his name shows us that God is quite imaginary. So this does hit on the premise, and I think is a broad question, which we cannot really provide an answer, which is, like, it seems part of what God has set up that he simply permits this, right? Like, because frankly, the world should have ended already.
Yeah.
You know, the moment Adam was deceived, that what God had created had been tainted, and he simply could have just chucked the whole thing, right?
I think it shows he's quite patient.
Patient and loving, that we have the ability to repent and move back. And so, you know, I guess the thing that he's talking about, I would actually agree with. It doesn't make God imaginary, though, to me. Says, you know, one of the things I can look at and say, you know, God does not speak. God, you know, to the same reason that you're upset that God hasn't spoken, God having not cut us off yet continues to permit me to repent and to allow others to repent and come back to him from a place where they shouldn't be. So anyway, that was proof number 49 from GodIsImaginary.com. Let's look at the opening salvo of proof number 50 of the 50 proofs. Here we go. It's one of his favorites. It's a big, fun topic that he loves. Proof number 50, ask Jesus to appear. Here's the opening salvo. Just about everyone knows the story of Jesus' death and resurrection. The story is summarized in the Apostles' Creed. Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried. He descended into hell. On the third day, he arose again from the dead. There was only one way for Jesus to prove that he rose from the dead. He had to appear to people. Therefore, several different places in the Bible describe Jesus' appearance after his death. Matthew chapter 28, Mark chapter 16, Luke chapter 24, John chapter 20 and 21. Good, he's done his homework. 1 Corinthians 15, 3-6 provides a nice summary of those passages as written by Paul. And he continues, when we look at 1 Corinthians, there is a question that comes to mind. Why did Jesus stop making these appearances? Why isn't Jesus appearing today? It really is odd. Obviously, Paul benefited from a personal meeting with the resurrected Christ. Because of the personal visit, Paul could see for himself the truth of the resurrection, and he could ask Jesus questions. So, unnecessary space, why doesn't Jesus appear to everyone and prove that he is resurrected, just like he appeared to Paul? There's nothing to stop Jesus from materializing in your kitchen tonight to have a personal chat with you. And if you think about it, Jesus really does appear to each of us. If Paul needed a personal visit from Jesus to know that Jesus was resurrected, then why wouldn't you? That's proof number 50. We'll talk about that next week. You're listening to Live from the Path.
You know, here I think we're going to do this thing. I feel like it's time, Ben, that we might be getting ready to hit the 5-minute heavy.
All right, let's hit the 5-minute
heavy.
You
tell me when to flag it.
Okay, so here's the rules on the 5-minute heavy. I'm going to give you a generally heavy topic, one that tends to spur heavy conversation. We tend to, I wouldn't say that we necessarily shy away from it. There's just other stuff to talk about, and there's a lot of bobbleheads on radio, Christian or otherwise, talking about this kind of stuff. And I don't know. I generally think they probably have it covered, and you probably made up your mind anyway. But we're doing it today. It's called the 5-minute heavy. I'm going to introduce it, Mike. When you say go, you give me the go. I'll introduce the topic and I'll open it up.
5-minute heavy and go.
Here's the question. So recently, the Boy Scouts of America have publicly stated that they are no longer banning homosexuals, openly homosexual folks from being in the Boy Scouts. They still have a ban on openly homosexual leaders and scoutmasters, but for those in attendance. They have opened that up. Here's my question: is what would not what is your reaction? Because I know the biblical perspective, and I think we're all pretty clear on that. The question is like, A, what would you, if someone were to ask you, should I take my kids out? What would be your answer, and what information would you provide in that respect, Buva?
Should you take your kids out of the Boy Scouts?
We only got 5 minutes. Don't repeat the question.
I understand. I'm trying to take my side on it. No. I would say no. I don't think they're being put towards bad influences. I think it's a great way to learn a lot about the different people that have different beliefs. They're not forcing their beliefs on you, and if they are, then that's a whole different story. If they're not, it's not the biggest deal on the planet. You shouldn't immediately be frightened because of openly homosexual people. We're called to love all.
Dan Hudson.
I would have my children out. If I'm looking for a place for them to be in a safe environment that was not necessarily Christian, but really Christian based and godly centered, and now they have publicly and voted to reverse that, I'd say, well, I'll put my kids somewhere else. Just out of principle of I don't need my kids there. They can see those people at school. You know, I mean, the mixes, the diversity, all the stuff. I don't mean those people, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Mike. That's actually a pretty good question. I don't know. Here's the deal. Like the kids that you're talking about that are in Boy Scouts, frankly, they're sexually confused anyway. I don't even know that they know what they mean or think they know what they mean. They're being fed by their culture around them and their parents that tell them this is the deal and it's okay to be this. Frankly, I think they're just confused kids. And so up until the age of, say, 16 or 17, I'd probably let them stay. After that, I guess we'd have to talk about it. Once again, the kids are confused. I mean, everybody, all youths are sexually confused anyway, straight or not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And frankly, anybody that believes that it's okay from an early age to do this is just being fed by their parents or their culture. And so, I mean, to make the kids suffer, I feel like it's not a good reason for me to pull my kids completely out. And frankly, if that was the case, I wouldn't let them watch TV either. You know what I'm saying? I have to do a lot of parenting here. And is this situation any different than any other situation they're going to run into? I say no. I say I parent well. I teach to love. They can go where they want. Any rebuttals, fellas?
As a former scout, there's a lot. I mean, you spend a lot of time in a tent in the middle of a field. I just wouldn't put my child in a situation where he could be potentially in a situation he wouldn't know how to handle.
I think you're looking at that situation either way. What do you mean? I think you're looking at like that the possibility of any type of assault is equally there, no matter how you're there.
Yeah, but when you openly say, "Yeah, come on in," then I'm just saying this. I'd be out totally.
I disagree.
Yeah, I'm still on the basis of disagreement because the fact that it falls upon. You're not falling upon the Boy Scouts to teach your kids. It's your job to teach your kids to know the difference between those things and to know that right from wrong and to have that biblical bring up to be able to know, yes, that's sin. Do we completely avoid those people entirely? No.
Yeah, here's the deal. You're trumpeting up as a master sin again. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sure the Boy Scouts accept ex-juvenile defenders who've been put in there for assault or theft or whatever, and they can still come in. Would you take your kids out for that reason? You're trumping up a sin again. You're calling a sin a greater sin than other sins, and I don't see it.
What's the time frame, Mike?
You got 45 seconds, Ben.
All right.
We'll wrap it up.
Okay. All right. Well, so it sounds like this is actually kind of the lines I thought this would probably go. I would think broadly, I think the answer is it's your responsibility to parent your kids. Anytime you rely on a different organization, be it the Boy Scouts, be it the public school system, whatever, you know, a lot of times we spend our time fighting what's going on in there when ultimately your responsibility does lie with you as the parent to make sure that the worldview is correct and they do have truth walking into those situations. I don't think you can protect them from everything. And so, I mean, I think I can see the choice either way. I understand it. But I think recognize it is, first of all, you're not never going to be able to hide your kids completely from sin. They are going to be exposed to it. It's more the, do they know how to handle it? Do they know how to handle situations? Now, I also don't believe it's necessary to expose them. Like, if you know it is a non-positive place that will negatively influence their worldview, I don't think there's a reason to continue to do that either.
5 minute heavy.
Okay, there you go. That was the 5 minute heavy.
5 minute
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that is. So the question from the chat. Shoot. Now, the chat has asked a question, so I'm going to extend a little bit on the
1 minute extension of 5 minutes.
All right. So the chat says, come on. Can you say that there are no gays all around them anywhere else? What about school? Should we totally shelter them?
I think we protect them. This isn't about sheltering them or keeping them away from them. They say they're around. You don't send them on a camp out.
On what grounds? What are you protecting them from?
Some other 8-year-old trying to grab their
right.
butt.
Like, I mean, are you protecting them from a physical attack?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's generalizing the situation. I honestly don't think that would happen. Maybe I'm just naive. I just don't think that would happen at all.
Actually, I think two straight guys would do it. They did. It's hazing. There's hazing incidents that go on of that very thing. You still put your kids in football.
Ooh, football.
I'm just. You know what I'm saying?
Football is public Boy Scouts.
Kids do.
That's a good point.
Kids do creepy stuff to each other straight wise just because they're mean. Just because they're mean and crude people. All right. Anyway, thanks, chat. Thanks for cutting in. That's the end of the 5 plus 1 minute heavy.
6 minute
like,
heavy.
I don't like the 5 minute heavy.
I know. It's here's
it's heavy.
It is heavy.
It's generally not our style because here's the thing. Is like a lot of times with those discussions, I don't think you're moving mountains either way. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like they're heavy for a reason. Usually God's word is pretty clear on the things that are heavy, and people are fighting over things that aren't really biblical. They're fighting over how they feel about it. They're fighting over like whether someone's going to get pissed off. They're fighting over, you know, how irritated people are, whether it's whether our culture is disintegrating, what it has to do with politics. Like that's what they're fighting over. We're generally not fighting over or discussing like what does the word of God say. We know that. Right, right. It's the peripheral stuff that's actually being debated. And I'm not sure it really adds much to sit down and like babble about it. Because if God's truth is what God's truth is, I don't know what we're going to squabble about to like come to some kind of, you know, magnificent answer.
No, that's true.
It's just button heads.
Yeah.
Dan, I still consider you my friend.
There you go.
People are in the Boy Scouts past 17. Whatever, chat. I know people been there until 18, 19. Yeah. I said 16 or 17. You purposely took the later one to make me look foolish. That's unfair. You know, it's unfair. Here we go. Dear, live from the path. I wasn't quite ready. I just thought I'd throw it out there. I'm a 15-year-old girl with a good life. There are bumps in the road, but they happen and I accept that. The thing I worry about is my meemaw. She's getting very old. I think she will be dying soon. I try to tell her not to think that way. I really love her and I don't know what I would do if she were gone so soon. I go to her house every summer, winter, and anytime we're out of school. I need to get a job this summer and I don't know how to tell my meemaw I won't be coming to visit without hurting her feelings. She's one of those people who don't show their emotions like most of my family, so I know when she sometimes says it's okay, it really isn't. Please tell me what to say to her.
I feel like meemaw will understand. You're 15 years old. It's summer. Get a job.
She thinks she's going to die soon. Booba, she likely will die soon.
Okay, she
that
likely
happens
will.
To everyone.
Does that mean that she's going to regret, you know, getting a job that summer? She spent a lot of time with her meemaw so far. It's inevitable. No matter how much time she spends with her right now, she's going to miss her meemaw just as much. It doesn't matter if you spend every 7 days a week with her or an hour every year. It she's going to miss her no matter what.
Here's my guess.
Get the job.
If my guess is that her grandmother does not necessarily want to see her spend a healthy point of her early life in the waning days of the grandmother's life, that she'd like her to live her life. And, you know, still visit and everything, but yeah, like...
Right.
She doesn't want her granddaughter to be lazy. She's probably thinking, why don't you get a job?
Yeah, yeah. Because here's the thing. It's like all the cool stories that your grandmother told about when she was younger, you won't have because you spent all your time hanging around with your grandmother.
Yeah. You'll be able to tell your grandmother's stories from when she was younger, yeah. Not your own.
Your stories will to your grandkids will be the things that your grandmother did and not the things you did because, you know, you spent all your time in the old folks' presence.
Yeah, I think Meemaw will understand. Just tell her. Say, hey, Meemaw, I need to get a job. Yeah. I'm going to miss you like crazy. This summer's not going to be the same, but I love you.
I think it'll be fine. Here's what Secular says. You are sweet, thoughtful, and sensitive, but you're also growing up. Your grandma may be talking the way she is because of her age, or she may be concerned about her health and trying to prepare you. It's time to ask your parents what's going on with her. If she's really sick, you may want to postpone getting that job until next summer. If she's not, you should explain to Meemaw that you love her and treasure the special times. I believe Secular thinks she's being manipulated by Meemaw, and
yeah.
I didn't get that.
Yeah.
But as much as you like to, you will not be able to do it this summer because you need to get a job. It's part of becoming an adult and will help you to learn responsibility and independence. As a loving grandparent, she knows how important that is for you.
I'm pretty sure she won't work 24/7.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's still like she's time to go see Meemaw.
Yeah. She's going to be working like
done with the quick trip,
12
like
hours
stuff,
a week. She's 15.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like
shoes at the factory.
Exactly.
It's not like you're
working in a sweatshop 12
two
hours
shifts,
a day,
you know?
7 days a week.
You can barely pull 12 hours at the local ice cream parlor.
I was going to say, she's going to go serve French fries to people for
Grandma,
2 hours.
I've up for the coal mine. Don't,
exactly.
I'm also, don't die. I'll be back next summer.
I'm also in prison. Dear Life from the Path, I am a hairdresser. And one of my clients who considers herself to be my good friend handed me a birthday card. Stuck on the envelope was a sticky note with my name written on it, covering whatever name was underneath.
Sorry.
On the card under happy birthday was her signature, again on a sticky note. She says she thought the card was funny and too good not to use again, so I should pass it on too. I am hurt and insulted, Am I taking this too seriously? I want my own birthday card.
No, I love that. I think that's awesome.
That is absolutely great.
I almost did that this weekend. I was looking for graduation cards, and I didn't find one of my liking, but there was a birthday one that I thought was funny. So I thought, I'm just going to cross out this birthday thing and write graduation on it. Because, like, it's a better card.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but her situation is a little different. Someone gave her this card, and she just put sticky notes over the original.
Hey, you could have been a little bit more covert about it. I'll give you that. I would have tried at least done a whiteout or something. The sticky note's pretty lazy. However, it depends on the personality, right? I would not be offended about that at all.
No, I'd laugh hysterically at that and be happy with that person.
Now, it's a little tougher if it's just your hairdresser, though, because, like, you're not close enough to know whether that's insulting or not.
She says that she considers herself a good friend.
It feels like it's a good friend. I don't know. Just because you told your gossip to somebody doesn't mean you're their friend.
We need to talk to some hairdressers. No, I think you shouldn't get offended, but that's just me. If you get offended, oh, well, life goes on. You're going to get offended at a billion things in your life.
I don't know. Yeah. The person that cuts your hair, that's kind of a dangerous person to offend, though.
No, those same people do a manual shaving.
Can you give me a shave?
With the single blade?
Yeah, they go Sweeney Todd on you when you give them a birthday card that doesn't have their name on there.
That Sweeney Todd reference probably isn't our crowd, Boova. Just something to think about.
Fair enough.
You know, I feel guilty every time I spend money on a card because I'm thinking they're gonna look at it, go, and they're gonna throw it away.
I don't think I've ever kept a card in my life.
I'd rather have someone give me the money than the money they. You know,
man,
I get $55 worth of cards. Just give me the cash. I'll fill up my tank with gas or something.
Here's the deal. I have never met such an aggressive chat in my life. Like you hate every bit of advice that we have. That generally never happens. Usually it's my mom, and she's like, "Good job, Mike. Sounds good. I agree.
I love you.
Unbelievable. Here we go.
I'm feeling sick though. You better come visit."
Here's the secular answer. Your client was trying to be thoughtful, or she wouldn't have remembered it was your birthday. That's a good point.
That wasn't very thoughtful.
Be grateful for what you got. She didn't mean to insult you. In a weird way, she was trying to do you a favor.
I'm just going to set this expectation. You should all expect a birthday/graduation, maybe anniversary card for me sometime this year.
That's just
that
good recycling.
That is going to have a post-it with your name over something that was given to me.
Now, think about it. This woman, that's a card that this woman actually saved, too. You know, she didn't get it and chuck it. So, I mean, it obviously she liked it. It meant something to her. Her story, I think, plays out to me. That doesn't seem like a lie. I feel like it's true, and I think you should be... I think you should just enjoy the card.
I will start recycling cards. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
I'm going to do it.
Oh.
We'll see how many relationships get ruined this year.
Okay. Here's our options. I got a couple more here, but one of them's kind of heavy. I feel like we've outdone the heavy, so I'm going to skip past it, and we might come back.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, what is a man's ethical responsibility when he hears of a crime in group therapy? Ooh. While attending a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I heard a man confess that he had dropped a cinder block on a boy's head when he was 12.
Oh!
The man was never arrested for the crime. I can't stop thinking about the boy who was his victim. Should I tell the police?
First off, if you're the leader of the group, I'm sure your organization has...
He did not claim to be the leader of the group.
I'm just saying, in the case that you were the leader of this group...
That was not the situation we were given. That's like saying, if you were Superman, you could blah, 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 and that is not the situation. So he's not the leader. Continue on.
Right. He's just a participant. He's taken no oath to not share the information. I'll put them in limbo.
If you were the Terminator, you could fix this right now.
Isn't that kind
of... I feel like you're giving, like, outlandish thing.
Generally, in these groups, it's kind of a given that whatever is said stays here type of thing. But that does cross a line when you're going, like,
You have to run in that in pastoral counseling, right? You run into that sometimes?
I've never had a murder confession.
Well, I didn't ask if you had a murder confession. Like, what people talk about things in counseling, like in general, you know, do you ever have to go, you should probably talk to the police about that?
I've never had to, that I can recall.
So you're an accomplice.
That's why I was saying if you're the lead of the group. The whole concept is normally if you were in any way sworn into this situation, you have... behaviors and expectations of you by the organization that you're representing to say this. So it doesn't call upon us to give you that advice. Your organization probably has a policy and procedure set up for you that you need to either A,
you
say,
corporate student.
Listen, let's say you're the corporation. What would be your policy then?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell something.
There we
absolutely.
Go.
Ben?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a sworn counselor. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a guy that happened to hear you talking about dropping a cinder block on somebody's head.
I mean,
I'm not doing you any favors by holding on to that information.
Let's say the guy's 40. It was like 28 years ago.
Good. It's time for him to pay for his problems.
Right. I mean, would you talk to the guy first? Say, look, you need to go make this right with Cinderblock Kid. If you don't, I'm going to tell the police.
You bet I would.
So it's a, so
yeah,
it's
I wouldn't
a,
hesitate telling them. Yeah, that, I mean, you have to. You have to.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a consequence thing.
Yeah.
It's blackmail.
No.
But you also know there's probably nothing going to happen. It's the past the, what do you call that? The
statute of limitations.
Yeah,
statute that's fine. That's he still needs to do it. It's yeah. it's the right thing for him to do.
He'll
I'm
probably
not
do a civil suit or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make him pay.
There we go. Secular says.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Secular says.
It is the group's leader's responsibility to contact the authorities if a group member is in danger of himself or others.
You're not right. You're a lackey.
No, I agree. Here's the deal. Narcotics Anonymous is not an official anything. You know what I'm saying? That's like me starting a group and then making a bunch of bylaws and then cowtailing to some. You know what? Take the Westboro Baptist Church, for example. They're a perfect example. They're an organization with terrible theology and stupid rules, and they're like, what if something happens? Well, better go ask your leader. Your leader's the one that set up the stupid rules. Like, that just doesn't apply. It's just a foolish way to look at things. Just because you're a leader of anything doesn't make you a good leader or a profound leader.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying Narcotics Anonymous may have been put on by an organization, as in a church or something else.
I feel like I'm talking to the wind.
What Mike's saying is it doesn't matter. The question is, what would be the right thing to do regardless of the policy or procedure? Go. Continue with the secular advice.
Secular says, if this happened when the man was 12, what would accomplish to report it at this point? Because this has been preying on your mind, you should talk with the group leader about the matter. I need counseling because other people have done bad things. No. And they're not paying their penance, I guess. Okay, that's a different way to look at it. Here we go.
Hold on. So, okay, so the chat, I think, is kind of on Buva style, saying that if you're not the leader, then, yeah, you got to say something. If you are the leader, there might be confidentiality issues.
Okay, now I agree with that.
Yeah, so I mean, the question is if there's a legality thing, although, you know, ultimately, maybe the question is it's not necessarily whether it is something that has to be resolved legally or not. The question is like, you know, would you approach that person as a leader? I would definitely approach that person, even if you can't force the issue or like report it on its own, and then maybe I'd encourage someone else to tell on them. Is that wrong? Tell me it's wrong. Bill,
actually,
you say something.
You would have,
well, I can't say anything, but you can go to the police. Is that what you're saying?
You know, sometimes it does stink to be the manager. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Hey, you're listening live from The Path. Coming at you at 99.3 KTA every Saturday night. I hope you're hanging out, doing nothing with your family, not spending time doing anything productive, but just listening to Live from The Path. There's room to grow in your life. we got to let you go if you're on KTA. If you're listening on the livefromthepath.org, we'll continue with the show. You guys have a good week. Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm a 21-year-old nursing student in college. I'm a people person, and everyone says I'm easy to talk to. Mm-hmm. According to my friends, I'm pretty, smart, funny, etc. But I have never had a boyfriend. I was extremely sick throughout high school and during my early college years and spent a lot of time in and out of the hospital. I missed not only a lot of schooling, but also learning some of the basic social skills most people my age have mastered when it comes to dating.
Yeah.
It has been only during the last couple of years that I've been healthy enough to even consider dating, and now I have no clue what to do. I'm naturally friendly, and sometimes guys I'm not interested in think I'm flirting with them. However, when I try to flirt with a guy, it never works. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and my friends all gave me different advice. Do you have any tips for me, dear Life from the Path, on how to let a guy know I'm interested?
Well.
First off, pray that God brings the man that you're supposed to marry in your life.
Here's the deal. I'm also bad at flirting. my wife will attest to this.
I've noticed.
I couldn't do it even if I wanted to. I can't tell when people are actually flirting with me. Now, shut up, Booba. It's happened to me before. Other ladies have been flirting with me, and I had no idea it was happening. And my wife's like, she's totally hitting on you. I said, why?
That's a valid question.
Has she no judgment?
Yeah. Like, does she see me?
I brought you with me. I feel like that it's my shield. Like, there's no reason for this to happen anymore.
I shouldn't have to deal with this stuff anymore.
I mean, I've had this face my whole life. I don't understand what's changed. But here's the deal. I totally understand where she's coming from. When I was attempting to court my wife, I had no idea how to behave. You know what I'm saying? I assume that people have done it a lot, are better at it. When I'm just like, hey, do you want to play John Madden football sometime? You know, do you want to get a coffee? Isn't that what people do?
I think that people who have a lot more experience are just smoother at it. I think really all you need to do is just be honest. Be honest with the person. Say, hey, you know what? I find you attractive. I'd like to hang out with you. most guys would love to hear that. You know, you don't have to be all like, you like burgers? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
the answer is yes.
Yeah. I mean, just be honest. Just tell them straight up, hey, or tell the person you're not interested, you know, I'm just not interested. Thanks.
I feel like a relationship based on your flirting skills.
But is it? Wait,
you don't want to know.
I think I do.
Something's happened. Go ahead, Booba. Continue on with your relationship advice.
Which is a definitely bad thing.
Health.
I feel like your relationship, if it's based on your flirting skills, is not going to go too great. You know, honestly, I'm a firm believer that if God wants the relationship to happen, regardless of how flirtatious you are or how you go about it, it's going to happen.
I don't think that's true. I think you could totally screw something up. I think God could send you a blessing and you could totally biff it. I disagree.
I would agree with that, but
you
I don't think
you poop your pants in the middle of the thing.
That's I don't to- think she's at that level.
Let's go to the Ritz. Womp. Let's not.
Maybe later.
I think she understands the concept of things that are socially just disgusting and wrong to do. I think the
let's go to Long John's.
I don't think the concept is she doesn't know whether or not she can crap herself on the date. I think the concept is whether she knows how to be flirtatious or not.
Now, there's a time
I think
that's
she
totally
knows not to go like, yeah.
I just learned this week that marathon runners, that they have to go when they're running. They just go.
That's disgusting.
I know.
What?
Who are you talking to?
I feel like you should get more advice on that from
like,
marathon runners.
That's honestly what they do.
No,
they
you just, talk to the one guy that poops himself.
No.
You might be talking to Jim John, and he's the only one who's ever crapped himself in a marathon.
Hold on a second. I'm going to vouch for this simply on the predictive Google results, because I typed in marathon space runners, and the top of number four is marathon runners poop. That's the fourth option of things
to
guys.
Search. It is a common thing.
How did that come up, Dan? Hey, how nice to meet you. I run marathons. What do you do when you got to poop, friend?
Hey, if you're flirting while you're on the marathon, you might poop yourself. And maybe you're destined to marry that person.
I feel that's poor preparation. If you know you're going to run a marathon, maybe you should ease up on the KFC the night before.
Your Metamucil doesn't need taken
that day. It's a medical issue. Doing
your body's rebelling against you.
It's kicking things in.
Stop running.
And rather than stop and do it, they'll just do it. Because they don't want to take the time. They want to beat their last.
I feel like your priorities are way messed up. If this is what's happening,
I really want to hit those 2 minutes. I'm just going to pee myself.
Okay, hold exactly. on. Let's reel it back into flirting. Here's what flirting is, okay? If flirting is only necessary when time is of the essence. You know what I'm saying? If you need to get the relationship moving quickly to a nefarious end. Really, if you just want to get to know somebody over time, flirting is not even necessary. You just say, hey, how's it going? I dig your style. Let's boogaloo somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of hanging out with you at work. Let's go to the truck stop.
Mike, I want you to – I know you're married. I want you to try that
to
with
a hot woman. I mean,
to
she's
anyone.
Hot.
I want you to try it to anyone.
I will.
I really dig your style. Let's go boogaloo to the local truck
stop.
You
should have the guitar in your
I really
hand.
Want you to win that woman over to your heart.
With the ukulele.
I really dig your style. I'm trying this. I'm doing it. I'm going to go out to the world, and I'm going to try the dig your style boogaloo to the truck stop.
My wife stopped watching the show.
Mike Foos, three steps to a relationship. Digging style, boogaloo, truck stop.
There's a deal.
And you're in.
It's our first book.
Flirting is obsolete.
Any woman that does not dig on that, you don't want anything to do with it. You know, say this is the caliber of lady you're looking for.
The dig your style boogaloo truck stop lady.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that would not have worked on Cheryl.
This is a win. All
get
right.
in my Geo Metro. Let's beast. El Camino says what? I call her Sherry. Get in, Sherry.
Don't worry, I can handle both of you.
No, Sherry, don't defrost. She don't defrost.
You just gotta wait around.
If you ever win over a date like this, I swear I'm giving up entirely. Because
here's be honest with you, I've thought about doing this, right? Because I never really had to. I only dated one woman my whole life, right? And I thought, I wonder if I have any skills at all in this area. So I was really very interested, with my wife's permission, to see if I could try to flirt with a woman and pick up a date. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, would you like to go out with me? Because I never actually had to do it. She asked me out.
Because you don't care, it'll work.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, I got to be able to pull this off.
Yeah, that's what I'm scared of, too. Mike's going to get like 30 numbers and come home and be like, hey, sweetie. Yeah, we got to talk.
It's a problem.
If my phone starts blowing up, it's not my fault. Boova told me to do it.
I got 15 boogaloos for next Tuesday.
You know any dudes that like to boogaloo?
I also have a fuel saver card at the truck stop. That's excellent.
They really enjoyed my business. It was it was quite often.
It's silly. Not to get off the advice thing, but it's not a good idea to hit on other ladies when you're a married man. That was just a hypothetical, and I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, what's your advice? What's your general advice?
No, I think Dan's holds firm. Just be honest. Here's the deal. If you're an awkward person and you don't know what to say, it's going to come out eventually.
Yes, it will.
Like, even if you've got a sweet opener, like the next question is going to throw you off. You might as well just come out straight with it.
Yeah. I love your sleeves. They're really big.
Well, you could fit a gerbil in there. And
did you attach those sleeves personally, or did they come with a shirt like that? Because that is top notch.
Do you like ketchup? Because I'm kind of fond of it. My brother spilled some on his shirt once, and I thought he died. I thought he was attacked.
I have some packets in the glove box of sherry. Would you like some packets? Okay, here we go. Secular says, here's some advice. Yes, be your outgoing, friendly self with everybody. Don't be afraid to smile and make eye contact. That's the way you let others know you're interested. That's a lie. If I'm in a bold face, have you ever seen any movie when people are lying? They stare you right in the face. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's do this deal. You're going to make good money. Shake, shake, shake. Company of choice. They stare you right in the eye. Smile at you like your best friend. Uh-huh. The best liars stare you right in the face.
Huh. Yeah, actually, people always try to prevent from knowing that you're lying by giving you the advice of what bad liars would do. Hey, don't twitch your, you know. Liars twitch their face. Bad liars twitch their face.
Yeah.
Bad liars look off to the side and don't look in the eye.
Good liars, they stare you right in the face.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Looking people in the eye, that's a scary proposition, right? That does not necessarily mean they're interested in you. Have you ever sat at the DOT waiting for your driver's license? third hour in, you've caught the eye of a 87-year-old Puerto Rican man down the way.
Yeah.
That smells like chimichangas. And every time you look over that way, he's looking at you. Now he thinks you're interested. And here he comes, shaking his way over, thinking that you and him are going to boogaloo.
Calm down to the truck stop.
Big he's mistake. A Boy Scout. That's okay. Yeah. Penalty for coming out of the five-minute heavy, Dan.
Here we go. So anyway, the problem with trying to flirt is that you can come across awkward and aggressive, which can either bring you the wrong kind of attention or scare a man off.
Hey, now, hold on a second. Is it if you know that being outgoing and nice is going to make someone think that you're interested in them, like, don't you have a responsibility to kind of tone it down a little? Especially if you're dealing with someone that's unfortunate looking.
Unfortunately.
I don't know how else to put it. But, like, who doesn't get attention?
I only hang around beautiful people. I don't know.
So you're saying you don't be outgoing and nice to someone who's unfortunate looking so that they don't get that whole glimmer of hope because they're unfortunate looking.
Okay.
And they may take it wrong as you're making an advance.
That has happened to me.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Someone has been outgoing and nice to you because I know it's not the other way around. Someone has been outgoing and nice to you and you mistaked it as flirting?
Yep. Here's the thing, that people who are good looking and friendly generally don't have any business talking to me, right? And so when they come over, I feel special. I'm like, wow, they're really genuinely nice to me. Wonder if they dig on my action.
Does she dig my style?
So then I throw up a defense wall, right? And I start getting real awkward because I don't know how to act when people are interested in me. I'm always used to people not liking me. And so it gets really weird. You know, they're like, hey, how's it going? I'm just friendly, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then especially if they bring up the topic of Jesus, then we have something to talk about. But if they don't talk about Jesus, I'm totally hosed. I'm like, so do you see that? Boy, it's hot in here. You see, you ever watch a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? That was a show. You know what I'm saying?
I can do the Carlton.
I don't know how to behave at all.
Actually, I found that, of course, it does rarely happen to me, but like it's happened to me a couple times, and I get like way defensive and almost jerky about it, as if like I don't want to be caught talking to a good-looking lady with anything that would be perceived as if I'm allowing her to hit on me. So like, you know, I'm suddenly like brushing her away, and I'm kind of rude about stuff, and I'm not looking her in the eye. Maybe I'm scratching my armpit or something. And it's and then I feel bad later. It's like, well, I didn't really need to treat her like that.
Yeah. I feel
she
like
was
attractive
just being nice.
People should just not approach either of you two because you
I'm
immediately get defensive.
Extremely awkward.
Guys, I look like a bridge troll, but if someone attractive comes up to me, I don't immediately go, well, they're obviously coming up here
it's
for the
because
wrong
there's
reason.
No chance that they're actually interested in you. There's a slight chance they're interested in me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You are so far below the scale.
I have a winning personality and awesome insight with people.
So, all right,
especially
when it comes down to it, I shouldn't be offended because there's no way they're interested in me.
You're not
a
threat for romance at all.
Okay. As long as I'm not the off-chance Casanova, I'm completely content with that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still, I mean, I'm 25% handsome. There's a chance someone might dig my style, like my beautiful lady I have now.
Step one, dig style.
Step two. Okay, here we go. So that was secular advice. One more. You guys ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path. What? Oh, boy. Troy, this is right up your alley. One of my coworkers takes company research presentation books into the restroom with him multiple times a day and spends upwards of a half hour in there with them. The unsanitary implications of this drive me batty. I'm not germophobic, but taking shared materials into the bathroom while you're doing your business is just too much for me. It's not like he's taking in a newspaper that can be tossed out. These are research materials that we must all share. My coworker told me I need to get over it, that this is a me issue. Am I crazy? Or is taking shared workplace materials into the bathroom gross and inappropriate?
Hold on a minute. So when they say her coworker, is it like the guy that's bringing the stuff in the can? Or is it a woman?
Like there's a company.
No, no, I know, but like I'm trying to figure out who she talked to. Did she talk to the person that's doing it, or like
right,
she talked to another coworker?
She talked to another coworker that's witnessed it.
Okay. First of all, never share lunch with the coworker that doesn't have a problem with this.
Yeah, no
right,
doubt.
Exactly. You
I feel like they're doing the same thing, and they're just trying to defend through advertising.
That's disgusting. That is just wrong. I don't care. Stay an extra half an hour if you need to spend that half an hour going over the company research papers while you're hitting the John. I'm sorry. That's just
part of me thinks. What's I mean, how sloppy are people?
Yeah, what could be going on in there?
I mean it's
an enclosed area.
Watch the line, fellas. Hold on, draw a line. Just watch the line.
We're past broadcasting. This okay. is the internet only.
Okay, so you can make a helicopter landing pad for your business. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you put toilet paper already in it to soften the splash. And I feel like that's the way to go if you're going to take research materials in there.
I feel like I don't care
what kind of toiletry
precautions you take.
Well, where's it going to splash to?
What?
I mean, here's the thing, Bova.
I'm assuming there's a big job going on in there.
There's only a certain number of postures you could take to cause such an event to get up all the research papers.
I understand it. But it's just looked upon like unsanitary.
Now here's the deal: the coworker who she talked to earlier isn't washing her hands anyway. What the risk that you're talking about is the exact same for someone who goes in there and comes out dry hands. It's the same problem. It's just not obvious.
I understand, but if for the obvious things, we should try and avoid them.
Why?
Because I'm sorry, that's just gross.
What are you licking the paper?
I mean, what's the problem? Sneeze at my desk all the time. You know, you still can't use a report from me.
I want my boogies on
your
trash
can. I can't believe I'm the minority on this concept. I think that's just weird. Don't take that into the John. Take the Uncle John's big reader into the John. It's made for that. Don't take my research analysis in there.
So what if I write on the front Uncle John's research analysis, then it's
yeah,
all right?
Exactly. That's, as long as it says Uncle John's in the front, that's what I was trying to get across.
I don't understand. You better not be reading something serious in there.
You better be the comics.
You better be having a good time. Yes,
okay. Let me put this into my perspective. I teach classes. I have curriculum books. If I see one of my students, I keep calling them students, but if I see one of my students coming out of the bathroom with their course curriculum, I'm going to be a little weirded out, and I'm going to ask them, you know, that's kind of company property. Can we keep that in the classroom? And then,
oh, okay. You're a nerd.
Okay, here we go. Is it all right to read the Bible on the John?
I hope so.
Can you read?
Yeah.
So wait a minute. I'm sorry. So you've placed your curriculum above the
no,
holy book?
Not at all.
As to what's allowed in the John? And
not
what is
at all. It's not a concept of one is put in higher regard.
So Why can't you have the Bible in the John?
We just talked about it. It's a shared thing. Maybe the one person isn't a germaphobe, but for the concept of the one person that is, even you taking anything work-related into the bathroom and doing your business while reading over that and then bringing it back into the room.
What if they laminated it and hung it in there for everyone to use?
I feel like we're going to throw out a billion what-ifs at me, but I just think it's just wrong. You know, honestly, stay an extra half hour late. Or do your business.
Wasn't it every day, though?
Yeah, all the time.
It's all the time.
It happens all the time.
You want to take her time away from her kids because you don't want to read in the corporate reader in the John?
Yes. I'm not afraid to take that stand.
Ooh, actually, hold on. Let's reread the first couple sentences here. There's more concerning items. One of my coworkers takes company research presentation books into the restroom. That's part one. With him multiple times a day and spends upwards of a half hour in there.
He
has a sickness. No one goes that many times in a day. Multiple times a day? Three, four times
okay,
a day?
Okay,
upwards
okay.
Upwards to half
here's,
an hour?
Here's what he does. He's wasting time.
Yeah,
and he takes the book in
that.
There to make it act like it's business. Yeah.
He probably buries it in the coat rack. Never even sees the John.
Yeah.
just makes it look like that when he passes by you. He's a con artist.
Now, here's the deal. Here's what I'm willing to admit. It should certainly be frowned upon. I mean, it shouldn't be advocated.
Right. I'm not saying go to HR and have them fired. I'm saying ask them to stop doing it.
And then they say no. Then do you go to HR?
No.
That's what happened. He said no. It's your problem.
No, he talked to the...
He talked to the random coworker. Okay, whatever.
Let's say he has the same response.
Hey, dude. Okay, let's try this out. Ben.
Okay.
You're going to be... Hold on. Let's see. What's the best route here? Boo, you're the guy that takes the thing in the John.
Okay.
Ben, you're the guy that wants him to stop it.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, John Boover the Third. I see you taking the corporate reader research paper into the John and spent a long time in there.
Yeah.
I think you should stop.
Why?
Because it's gross.
Well, that's too bad. I got to spend my time reading this, and I got to do my business. I'm not going to stay an extra half an hour late. I got kids to see, man.
I feel like you made a compelling case.
Wow, you gave in on that a lot faster than I thought you would.
I'm in. I mean, I feel like you should parent your kids. You're right. If you got to do your business,
hey,
you
man,
might two birds, you know.
Are you washing your hands at least, man? All right, fine.
Okay, fair.
I just think that's weird.
Here we go. Here's the secular's advice.
Some weird stuff that goes on.
Secular says... You're asking the wrong person this question. You should be asking the head of human resources or your boss. That's lame.
That is
lame. I have no germaphobe either, but I agree that what your coworker is
doing... Okay, hold on a second. What kind of conversation is that with your boss? Hey, I got to schedule a meeting on Thursday. We're going to talk about Chuck and the John.
You have no idea.
That's unnecessary.
Would you ever email that to someone? I would never email that to someone on the concern that they would forward it around and I'd be out as the guy... Who was like, first of all, doesn't that show that I'm like spying him going into the John? It's a woman, isn't it?
It doesn't say.
I think it implies it's a woman.
No, you're guessing.
I think it's a woman.
I think you're implying the sex.
Marie.
No, you're just guessing. Okay, here we go. Secular finishes up by saying, you should not have to sanitize your hands after touching anything your coworker might have touched, but that's what I'm suggesting you do.
Okay, first of all, that's safe practice. You never know what people
right.
are doing.
Yeah, no, there's a reason why you have the Germex everywhere in an office building.
You're a non-threat. Romantically.
Yes, thank
you're
you.
You're just not a threat to anybody.
I'm just going to make sure that I never get to defend to again when someone attractive comes up to the bridge troll that I am.
Yeah, yeah. These elbows don't say boogaloo. They say Lego my ego.
Yeah, exactly. I can't follow the step 1, 2, 3 Mike Fu's process to love. I just need to avoid it entirely.
Seriously, I was reminded this week that I really love toaster waffles with peanut butter on them.
That's awesome.
They're delicious. I mean, delicious. Put syrup on it. Eat it straight up. It's good.
Thank you for listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. You've been enjoying the extra bonus material after the 99.3 KTI broadcast. If you want to hear any of this episode, previous episodes, our special interview with Silverside, anything about the events we have coming up, go check out www.livefromthepath.org or hit up the YouTube channel. I don't know the exact address, so just go to the website and you can find it from there.
All right. Have a good week. This is Tim Tibbins sending you out. Have a good one.
See ya.
Oh, it starts with me.